this. So thank you for coming. My name is Mukesh Bhargava. For the 27% of folks who are new to PayStocks, and PayStocks is supported really by Northumberland Hills Hospital. And I see Susan is there. Susan, can you wave? She is the president and CEO of the hospital. I am Care, which is our practice, the Northumberland Hills Foundation. Jennifer Gilmer is there from Northumberland Hills Hospital. I don't see anybody yet from Ontario Health Team, but Susan is also Ontario Health Team. So you can wave the hand second time around. Community Health Centers in Northumberland, which is in Port Hope, the Northumberland Family Health Team, and Loyalists. So the young man that you see on the screen, Jaitra, can you wave? He's a graduate student at Loyalist in Media Studies. These are the folks who make the recordings possible, and they make them, more presentable than the live recording. So these are the supporters of PACE. PACE is essentially stands for Personalized Assessment and Change Education, started 5 years ago, just under 40 talks done over the last 5 years on different topics. Some of them, not all of them, are available online. Started as a practice project, and it has grown. And these are essentially a conversation starter on certain topics. The topics are related to human health. The principles are no solicitation. So it is not about somebody trying to say, oh, here's what I do, please come see me, or those kind of things. Topics are picked based on audience feedback. So folks email us, folks tell us, this is what I'd like to hear about. And then we try to find the right speaker for it. This is not about giving personal advice. So this is not treatment advice. This is not what you say, okay, I learned something here, I'm going to start doing tomorrow. But you still may need to have this sorted out for you. And this is not related to politics or policy conversations, or, you know, why doesn't the government do something, or so-and-so do something. This is pretty much a conversation starter for our community. Most importantly, the speakers, the moderators, the organizers, the organizations, nobody can get paid in this. So there is no reimbursement for anybody. There's no money involved. It is a zero cost, but it is by the generosity of time from the people at each of these organizations and the speaker. So with that said, today's topic, as you most of you said, that the topic is the most interesting thing. The topic is relates around spiritual care, and I'd let Sabine talk about how she picked the topic. But for introduction purposes, and let me make sure. Sabine is highlighted. So Sabine Fisher is a registered psychotherapist with a Master's of Arts in Spiritual Care and Psychotherapy. So when we talked about having this, it was initially like, as a moderator, you need to know what the topic is. And I must say that it was like, okay, how does this fit in? And the more I read, the more I figure out how much I didn't know. And I'm really excited to learn myself. But some of the questions that came as a pre-poll for Sabine that I've shared with them is, what is spiritual care? How does it relate to healthcare? And how can I access or activate spiritual care? And then personally, I want to have a conversation with Sabine as like, how do providers or doctors or others incorporate this in their thing, in their practices? So Sabine, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And this is the point where I share my screen, right?
Yes, you can share your screen.
Okay. And I will, hopefully this is going to be in the right presentation mode. I am so pleased to do this presentation. This is a topic that's very dear to my heart. That's why I am the team lead at the Spiritual Care provider team at the hospital. And at the next hour or 45 minutes, we're going to be dealing with this subject. So I grew up as the daughter of a country school teacher in a small, small village in Germany. And my father provided spiritual care in his own way. As a teacher, he used to prepare the eulogies for the farmers in the village. And I remember him as a little girl providing that caring environment when somebody had died. And what then happened is that the first funeral was held in the deceased home, usually the barn. Then the second funeral, everybody moved over to the church, and that's where the funeral was held. Everybody knew what to do. And then when we immigrated to Canada and I lived in Toronto, I noticed that people did not know what to do when somebody was ill or dying. They didn't know how to talk to people. They didn't feel they had a role. And that was one of the main reasons, actually, why I chose to take a spiritual care and psychotherapy program when I decided to do my master's degree in mental health. So, why talk about spiritual care in a healthcare setting? Many, many things have changed. Our systems have changed over the last decades and since COVID. And funds have been cut, baby boomers are retiring, and the way care used to look like, it doesn't look like anymore. So nurses, medical staff used to have time to have conversations with patients, and that was part of their role. That is no longer their role. It theoretically is supposed to be their role, but practically they're inundated with other tasks that must be performed so that they just don't have the time. But the care for the heart has not gone away. The care for the human soul has not gone away. People are more lonely than ever. And it just makes sense for us as a community and society to give airtime as to how we can do that better. So how are we going to do that? Let's talk about what we're going to talk about today. What makes up wellness and holistic care? We're going to talk about what is spirituality and what is spiritual care. Who needs it? How do we know that someone needs it? We need to be aware of some of those signs and symptoms. Who provides spiritual care? And moving forward, what are opportunities in our community? So we invite you also to take notes, because afterwards, there will be a question period, and I'm really looking forward to the question period. Oops, I went one too far. So we'll start with a story. Our life as spiritual care providers are full of stories. So please know that the identities are protected. We're using composites to preserve privacy. Picture this. Ian is a 35-year-old man and husband and father, taken to the hospital after an accident. He's got bad injuries from this accident. The damage is severe, and he's told that he may never walk again. So he begins working with a physiotherapist, but he is losing hope. Then a spiritual care provider one day visits him and notices how pale and dejected he looks. She chats with him and hears that Ian has not really identified any life goals for himself. And instead, he's overwhelmed with thoughts of fear and despair. Ian was sure that he was not going to be able to be a capable dad anymore to his little ones. So the spiritual care provider asks him, "What would you really want to be able to do if you could walk again?" And he brightens up a little and says, he'd like to be able to take his son to a hockey game. He'd like to take his little ones trick or treating. And together, after that, they began drawing up a vision that gave Ian hope. And he needed that hope to persevere in this painful physio work that he was engaging in. Good news is he did end up healing quite well, and he was able to walk again and enjoy those things he was able to do, looking forward to do. So the spiritual care provider in that situation acknowledged the situation with all the limitations and then reconnected Ian with what his life goals thereby instilling hope and determination, which is what he needed. So our mindset matters a lot in our healing. So here's the slide that shows us what holistic health really is. We've got physical health, mental health, spiritual health. If I have a broken leg, where do I go? To the hospital. If I'm anxious or depressed, I might see a counselor. And when I need spiritual care, how do I know I need spiritual care? Well, that's what we're talking about today. So let's isolate the roles of physical care, surgery, setting bones, managing pain, physical manipulation, to name a few. Mental care, learning to manage your own mind and emotions. You do that with a counselor often because your mind can develop negative patterns. And those thought patterns can lead to mental, emotional, and sometimes physical and spiritual struggles. Spiritual care focuses on the person's heart. And we'll go deeper into what that really means. There's time and focus on the client's current well-being, the current view of self, and the connection they have to their heart and soul. The belief in something greater is something that we often explore. We explore inner and outer resources. So you can see how mental health and spiritual health are intimately connected. So when we're hurting, what's important to know, we look for ways to cope. We use body, mind, and spirit to do that. So if you take Ian from our previous example, Ian had a whole number of choices how he can address this. He can cope by trying to make sense of it, of his situation. Spiritually, he could think, this is the end. My life is over as I know it. Or he could think, this is a phase. I do have influence on my own outcome and change. Or he could use some substances to make him feel better. Is it a great coping choice? No, but it's one of the choices that people use and they're hoping to get better from it. He could use nutrition to gain strength. He could invite conversations with supportive friends and relatives, or he could withdraw, right? So connecting spiritual care and psychotherapy and counseling, there is my former professor who also wrote a book, Spiritually Integrated Psychotherapy, says spirituality is an extraordinary part of ordinary lives of people. And that is so true. He researched the relationship of spirituality on healing and coping and found that spirituality can be part of the problem and it also can be part of the solution. Psychology, to contrast, has focused in the past on gaining more control of our lives, which is a very important part of healing. And we use various strategies to do that that often prove helpful. But it's the times when we're not in control and at the mercy of outside factors where we struggle. Another story. Picture it. Doris, young woman, happily married, has a smooth pregnancy and has prepared the nursery for her first baby. One night, she feels something's wrong. The baby isn't moving. Her partner takes her to the hospital, and after several agonizing hours, she delivers a stillborn baby. Now, she had prepared mentally and physically to bring this baby home and be a mom. So she asks of him now, of course, how is this fair? I did not deserve this. So spirituality, those are spiritually boundary questions, spiritual struggle questions. And spirituality is a dimension of life that comes up front and center during major life transitions, when our life changes from how we understood it should be before. These are times when we're not in control and we have to find ways to accept certain changed realities, but that takes time. In the moment, it's very difficult to change reality. She might be thinking, I didn't watch my diet enough. I didn't take all the supplements. This is my fault somehow. And I deserve this somehow. Right? Those are thoughts that come up. Here's where the spiritual concepts come in. First, what is needed is to be with a person who suffers this transition, who suffers these struggles. And then over time, we help the person learn to accept without blame a situation that cannot be changed. So concepts like mindfulness, acceptance, and being present are also often very helpful in these tough circumstances. And all faith traditions offer resources for these situations. Now, in psychology, in the olden days, Freud dismissed spiritual beliefs. It's infantile. Today, we have accepted into counseling the understanding that our beliefs matter. We cannot practice cognitive behavioral therapy without also dealing with spiritual beliefs. It's part of our belief system. Eastern traditions such as Buddhism, Taoism, and the indigenous traditions have influenced modern therapy methods. So we think about these things differently now. Spirituality helps people come to terms with human limitations, says Ken Pargament. And once there is some acceptance of a given situation, spirituality also provides hope. The belief that positive change can still occur for an individual is one of the strongest motivators I've seen. And a change agent is one of the strongest change agents we know. On the other hand, loss of hope can lead to rapid overall deterioration. And in a hospital environment, all the healthcare providers present here have seen it. Well-delivered spiritual care has always demonstrated those qualities, but there are no longer any clearly defined places to access those providers. So then, moving on to physical health. How does spiritual care connect to physical health? Now we're getting into the research. I'm a bit of a research junkie. I'm warning you now. I could tell you 10 different, 20 different studies, but I'm going to spare you that and focus on a couple. This most recent study I came across, 2022, led by Professor Tracy Balboni, Professor of Radiation Oncology at Harvard, called Spirituality in Serious Illness and Health. So this is one of the most rigorous and comprehensive systematic analysis of the modern day literature on the subject. Very current. So this group of experts, multidisciplinary, called the Delphi Panel, made up of experts in healthcare and spirituality, public health and medicine, and a diversity of spiritual religious views, including non-religious, atheist, and the main faith traditions, got together, reviewed the evidence that was gleaned from this, and then offered some consensus implications. So according to these researchers, the simple act of asking about a patient's spirituality can and should be part of patient-centered, value-sensitive care. That was their recommendation. The information gleaned from this conversation can then further guide medical decision-making, because there are different stages of in the healthcare system around a patient's well-being, including, but not limited, obviously, to notifying a spiritual care specialist. They also noted that for healthy people, spiritual community participation, like, you know, regular religious service attendance, is, the data shows, associated with healthier lives, greater longevity, less depression, lower rates of suicide, and less substance abuse. Findings show then that for patients, spirituality is important and influences key outcomes in illness, like the quality of life they have, and the way medical care decisions are made if the spiritual care component is included. So incorporating considerations of spirituality as part of patient-centered healthcare, and increasing the awareness around clinicians and health professionals will bring the protective benefits of community participation. And they said that overlooking spirituality leaves patients feeling disconnected from the healthcare system and from the clinicians trying to care for them. So that's one part of the research. The next part of the research is a book that I found very interesting. It is about 10 years old, a book by Kelly Turner, who was an intern during her medical education studies to be a physician in the United States. And during her internship, she noticed as she was working with cancer patients that there were many patients with a stage four cancer diagnosis. And of those stage four cancer patients, there were some that survived. And she got really interested in that. So she decided to do her PhD on this subject and to research. What did they do? Are there any key factors? And if yes, what are they to make a difference in their healing journey? And here's what she found. I can highly recommend that book because each chapter goes into these findings. So they changed their diet. They used herbs and supplements. They took control of their health rather than being a passive going along rider of their own journey. They followed their intuition more, their inner guidance, which now we're getting into spiritual connections. In terms of psychological support, they released suppressed emotions, worked on that, increased the positive emotions in their life, embraced social support from friends and family, and deepened their spiritual connection, which then often led to having stronger reasons for living. But the last point is really a very dicey point, because some people do no longer have strong reasons for living. So not everybody is able to access all of those, right? But that is what her finding was, that those that survived had not always all nine, but a lot of them. But those nine were all present in at least some of the participants. Very interesting findings. Oh, where do we go here? Next, there we go. So then let's talk about high level. What is spirituality? You can have 1,000 different definitions, but when we think of the big faith groups and religions, such as Judaism, Hinduism, Christianity, many different large faith groups, where people find comfort and support in a system that they've grown up with, the traditions that they've grown up with can give great comforts. And then there are people who either turned away from their original faith tradition or really never had one, never grew up one, or were turned away from it, such as the indigenous people in this country, were alienated from it. So they no longer have a relationship or have a poor one or a broken one. And what we know about spirituality is that on an emotional level as humans, we all feel better when we can believe in something bigger than ourselves. A sense of meaning that we have in relation to the world around us. Because think about it, if we place all of our faith in external things or even people, if you place your faith only in other people, you'll get sadly disappointed. Why? Because they're fickle. People are fickle. I'm fickle. We're all fickle. I'm not always available, not even to myself. Then I just go to bed. We are not, when we depend on other people entirely, we often make them wrong, but it's an incorrect assumption. So we find comfort and meaning often through nature or a combination of supportive beliefs that help when we're in distress. Because in nature, particularly in nature, and we know this through studies that, you know, in psychotherapy, the impact on nature on our psyche. We feel a steadiness that we can rely on, a steadiness that we have not created and that doesn't depend on us. And isn't it nice that no matter how cranky we feel, isn't it good that the sun still rises every morning, that it doesn't depend on us? That's a good thing. And what we know from many empirical studies is that we'll get to that in a moment. That when people look to their spirituality or they start searching when they're in trouble, when there is a spiritual struggle. So the theologian Paul Tillich calls it the ultimate anxiety, when we experience the anxiety of fate and death, maybe of emptiness and meaninglessness in our lives, or guilt, shame, and condemnation. We can live in equilibrium for quite a while and tick along quite nicely in our lives. And then all of a sudden, our heart can get broken. We can have a situation that was unforeseen that we don't know how to deal with. Let's look, for example, at the person that feels lost, isolated by themselves, sits by themselves, and you see them on the park bench, or the nurse that just lost a patient, or the mother that had a stillbirth, or the woman who has a terminal illness and is exploring MAID, medical assistance, and dying, which often is a family situation that can greatly benefit by a caring presence. Or the physician who has to inform a father of five about his unexpected terminal diagnosis. These are major life changes. In times of distress, we look somewhere for help. We may look to a faith, to something comforting, or we have no faith, we may look to ourselves. It was my fault. I deserved it. So then, spiritual care. What is spiritual care and how do we listen for it? So in that previous example with Doris and her husband and the stillborn baby, in that moment, when she found out that she gave birth to a dead baby, she and her partner needed somebody that can acknowledge the pain, that can just be with them, allow for the emotions, get support, not be alone in that moment. And there is that concept of spiritual struggle. So what is a spiritual struggle? It's not weak faith. It's not signs of weakness. Many historical biblical figures we know of struggled with God. Spiritual struggles are a lifelong part of our human search, a human search of significance. They are part of our human condition. Because underneath the pain and conflict of any spiritual or non-spiritual struggle is the innate desire, human desire to feel good. When we don't feel good, we strive, we do something that hope we will feel better. And we want to find meaningful goals and purposes. Those are the seeds for our internal growth and evolvement. So Doris might ask herself, in her struggle, why me? Did I deserve this because I had an abortion 10 years ago? Spiritual struggles are obviously very closely linked to emotional distress. Her thinking, which is her mental wellness, about her worthiness, which is her spiritual struggle, can impact her healing and daily functioning, which is her physical wellness. And this is how they hang together. So spiritual care in action, The spiritual care spectrum consists of a number of things. What do we do? It's in a hospital setting, and really any spiritual care provider worth their salt keeps confidentiality, certainly in a hospital setting, certainly in any institutional setting. And it's a confidential person you're talking to with a non-judgmental and neutral person. They have no other agenda. So in that moment, what does the person do? You connect to the patient, client, and you support them in the moment. That can mean getting them a hot drink, walking with them, maybe being an ally and an advocate. You sometimes check for their inner resources or beliefs or faiths in a respectful manner, because we want to make sure we meet the client where they are and don't put something on them. That doesn't happen with spiritual care providers who've received training. You assess for unspoken fears, beliefs, needs, and wants. There's a mess going on behind that sad face that you see. A lot of things are going on. And you communicate with circle of care as needed, and sometimes refer to other care providers. So sometimes we need to call an elder or a rabbi or a priest, because I've had it in my own experience. When my brother-in-law was in his last hours, in his last days, the hospital he was in did not know he was Catholic, did not know that it's very difficult for somebody who's a devout Catholic and has been raised in that faith tradition, it's very difficult for them to die without last rites. And when I finally found out that a priest had not been called, I made sure a priest went, and he literally died an hour and a half later after he received last rites. These things are important, even if the person is nonverbal, right? So there was a recent article that I also wanted to point to on October 20th in the Lindsay Advocate online paper, I guess, addressing the overall the increased need for better overall care. And in this article, Pastor Boyacek acknowledges that the healthcare system is very effective in diagnosing and treating physical symptoms, of course. That's why we go to the hospital. But he notes that these medical systems are not designed to meet the needs of a patient who's wondering whether anybody cares what happens to them or whether their life mattered. And those are issues that are going on, not just the broken bones, right? It's a life change that's associated with it. And that's where spiritual care comes in. And I quote him again. He says, it's not science, it's not medicine, it's not clinical, it's care. So the emphasis here is on care. And for those who've ever been in need to it and didn't get it, or for medical professionals that do want to provide better care, what do we do when we need to provide spiritual care? And what does it look like? Again, it's listening, it's sitting, it's not being in a rush. And that's probably the hardest things for medical professionals, because there's always so much rush in our current system. And for medical professionals, also what would be helpful is to assess for it early. That's what the findings show in the study. And it used to happen, but now with the intake process, it sometimes gets lost. But there may be other areas, other times in the patient's stay in a hospital environment where that might be possible, or in a long-term care home, in any of the institutional settings. So finding out about spiritual beliefs and connections early on. Then when we need to talk to the person, or the person wants to talk to us and needs some time, find a peaceful spot. There's a spiritual care room, for example, at Northumberland Hills Hospital. Most other institutions have them. Acknowledge the pain, validate, allow silence, repress the urge to do something all the time, and reassure them, most important, that they're not alone. So what we do in that moment is we care for the heart. It's not about any theory. It's about seeing if they need a blanket, if they need a hot drink, and just listen. Just listen and see where they're at. Where do we find spiritual care? It's the strangest thing, but you've all maybe had times where you poured your heart out to a taxi driver. It's great spiritual care at times, right? A neutral, non-judgmental person with no other agenda. Sometimes we can find help and solace in those moments. Social connections are important. So good friends or trusted family members can be that. In a care setting, people can ask for a spiritual care provider. They may only be there some of the week, but they can be called. Medical support, medical staff can provide it. While they're not necessarily trained in it, they know enough, certainly, and most have received some training where they can have a good, meaningful, important conversation. And faith leaders, of course, lots of conversations around people being called into the hospital, the faith leaders that can provide support, and then counselors as well who have spiritual care training. So in the resources, we have, I've mentioned it as well. There are local faith communities, of course. This is Spiritual Care Week, incidentally, October 22nd to 28th. And this website at the top, transformchaplaincy.org, has a number of really interesting YouTube seminars as part of Spiritual Care Week. So if you go on that website, I've checked it, scroll down a little bit, you'll find a number of YouTube videos related to chaplaincy and mental health. Ed's House has spiritual care available as part of their service. The NorthumberlandPromise.com is a site that offers resources and services for public health, for the public housing community, and a lot of it for children and youth, but also for families. And Psychology Today is the referral website that lets you find local counselors with specializations in spiritual care. I wanted to go to the last previous slide. The opportunities in our community. I'm only going to mention a couple because we're already running a little late. I think there is opportunity to reduce risk factors and increase treatment outcomes in our community. So studies from 2015 and 2017 by Currier and Medlock clearly show that spiritual emotional struggles, if not addressed, are risk factors. So that's for any patient. Now, for first responders, hospital staff and paramedics, I think we can do a better job of providing on-the-spot support. Adding spiritual care support to any circle of care, from home care to long-term care homes, there's opportunity there. It would really help to take the stigma out of spiritual care, the topic of spiritual care, because it is not someone imposing religion on you. The other day, one of our spiritual care providers visited with a patient for about an hour and talked about all kinds of things. And at the end of the conversation, the patient says, "Well, here we've talked for an hour and we haven't even talked about religion." And she laughed and said, "I'm here to talk about you, about what you want to talk about. That's what this is about. Talk about what matters to you." Having spiritual support available at major life transitions is what we're looking to do. Creating better understanding and increasingly excellence in care, something we on an ongoing basis work on in every hospital. So let's move forward by keeping our eyes open to someone else's need, to needs in the community. And I think with all eyes open, we can continue to make positive changes in this community for sure. So I want to end, I didn't get to my last slide. I wanted to end with a quote by the 13th century Sufi poet Rumi. The wound is the place where the light enters you. And I will leave it at that. Here ends the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sabine. So if you could stop sharing and then we'll open it up for questions. Thank you. Bill Provecki, I know, why don't you ask or make your comment and the question? Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, the question I had is a good point about the Catholic priests with last rites. And I was just wondering, and I don't know whether we have it on my chart, even when you go in a hospital, I don't think we ask a person, what are your religious beliefs, just in case you need either a rabbi, an imam, or somebody to attend.
We used to. That was part of the intake session. I understand we've had some conversations around that on the spiritual care team. I understand currently it's often not asked. I think it is still on the roster of questions, but often there is such time pressure that it doesn't necessarily always get asked. So that's a bit of a gray area. You're right. And so in order to know, usually it's the nurse that takes care of the patient that knows some of these things and the families informed as well.
Thank you. Okay.
Susan.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. So my question was, thank you very much, Sabine, for this presentation. Really enjoyed it. What are some of the strategies that we can adopt daily to care for our own heart, spirituality?
Yes, that's such a good question, Susan. The self-care component, right? Especially of those who take care of others. It's, again, first of all, carving out the time. And it could be 5 minutes, it could be 15 minutes, but often my recommendation to my clients when we talk about adopting positive life strategies is developing a morning routine and an evening routine about setting an intention for the day, gathering our mind, rather than starting with frenzy, dreading the day, we're already not taking control of our mind, right? So if we just take a moment in the morning and again in the evening to assess, what am I looking forward to today? What is my intention for today? There are many different practices, but one of mindfulness, one of intention is so helpful to each person because it reserves, it carves out that time that separates us from all the stress and the hecticness. And that doesn't have to take long. Our mind doesn't need long. Our psyche does not need long, but it does need the intention. Yeah. That self-care is so important.
Thank you. Thank you. So Sabine, going over the example you gave about Ian who comes in a motor vehicle accident or an accident and he realizes he cannot walk anymore. And let's assume the doctor says, yeah, this person needs help, but he has a family, he has a faith. If this person was at Northumberland Hills Hospital, what would be the steps that happen? Like, does the doctor call somebody? Does the family call somebody? Does anybody call somebody? Who is that somebody? And then what do? They come talk to the person, they talk to the family. Because it's not just the patient who needs the support, it's the family who needs the support too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And anybody in the hospital that comes in touch with that client situation, that patient situation, can reach out to a spiritual care provider. We're there for that. We're there for the patients, for the families, and for the staff and the volunteers. We're there for anybody that comes in touch with the hospital. So anybody, whoever comes into the know first, that often, frequently, we've been called by physiotherapists or by social worker, right? Wherever the situation arises, where there's a conversation necessary that isn't directly medical. But even when it's directly medical, there are situations where people over and over get sent home from the hospital. They fall over and over, using up resources and ambulances and no one is in the position to make a decision to put this person, place this person, have the conversation to put them into a long-term care home. That's a big decision. A lot of guilt and shame often involved in the family. It helps to have a spiritual care provider to come at it to deal with the reservations, the fears that go along with making that decision. A decision-making process is complex. And it often involves emotional aspects that do not get addressed in the hospital. We have mental health services in the hospital, but they're off-site. They're not there. We're there. And that's where the bridge comes in for the spiritual care team, or in any, that's just the hospital, as you say, right? Does that answer it?
Yes, you did. So Bill asks, is the service available 24/7?
It is. We have there is weekly visitation. The 5 or 6 spiritual care providers do visit, go around different areas in the hospital weekly, but it's only a couple of hours per provider. So they are on call. There's a call system where if the nurse, and this happens frequently, where the nurse or anyone who says this person needs to see somebody. And then it could be during the night, or it could be during the day. If we can come, we'll come.
Great. Okay. Thank you. And Mary Lou Adams has a question. Patients' names by religion used to be provided to the main inquiry desk daily in separate envelopes picked up by a clergy who had to show an identification badge. Does that happen, or do you know, Sabine?
I'm not sure exactly how that happened. The main desk often gets notified when a spiritual care provider is needed. The spiritual care provider can be requested, So if it's a spiritual care provider, it's often done through the nurses. If it's another clergy or another faith leader, it often goes through the main desk. That's my current understanding.
Okay. Good. Other questions? So Sabine, you came from Germany. Your parents were involved in this. Where does spiritual care stand in Canada as compared to the world stage? And then where does it stand here? Like, well, is some country better than us, or
we're growing in leaps and bounds here in Canada. I'm glad to say it's we have more hospices now. That's a European institution that we learned from, to adopt over here. The hospitals do have spiritual care departments, but I can only speak for Germany a little bit. I'm not too familiar with it. But I do know, I have some friends that work in the hospitals. Germany, like here, people are not necessarily as active in their usual faith traditions. So as a result, the chaplains that used to be representatives of say Christianity or the Lutheran faith or Catholicism are not as present in the hospitals anymore. And the spiritual care component hasn't really taken over. That's a transition we're experiencing there and here too. So we're in an era where it's not a new need, it's the same need, but the way we meet it is changing. So we need to know, how do we address that need, since it's not the way it was 50 years ago? We've got to address it with what the need is today. And they're working with that over there as well. And I wish I could answer that a bit better, Maybe next time when I go, I'll check into that. That's an interesting question, but that's my understanding from the conversations I've had.
So Michael has a question, and then Irene, we'll go to you, Irene, next. Michael's question I'll read out. You mentioned intuition. How do you know whether it affects happiness level in a major way?
It's such a good question, because intuition, the way I understand the definition and the way I know it from my own emotion, when I have an intuition, it's a feeling about something I can't rationalize. So I may have the feeling that there's danger, even though I'm not seeing anything with my eyes or hearing anything with my ears. But you know what? I'm old enough at this age to know that if I ignore my intuition, it ends up biting me in the butt. So I will honor it. And it's not always a good feeling, but it's a guidance, can be a guidance. It's usually the result of intuition is different from inspiration. And intuition is usually the result, the feeling we're getting that's a result of a finely tuned combination of sensual input and mental input, mental understanding. So the mind and the feelings come together, and we have a feeling. It could be a sixth sense. We can also call it the sixth sense. I don't know what science says about that. Many times we've seen that to be true. A mother knew her son was killed in the war, had no evidence of it, and still had an intuition, right? I don't know if that's helpful.
I think I blended two questions, but we'll come back to one. Irene, you go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering, how does one deal with the change in, say, the process here in Canada of people when they die? Now, the pandemic changed it because we had these celebrations of life. But where I grew up in Ireland, you had a wake, then you had the church, then you had the funeral. So it was a way of helping you to mourn. So I've been through two situations lately where there was no obituary in the paper. There was no close celebration of life, let's say, until way down the road. But in the meantime, you're left hanging and mourning. You know, what do you do with that?
What do you do with that? And that is why we developed those transitions over hundreds of years, is to provide something for the bereaved. Oftentimes I hear that the person dying doesn't want it.
Yeah.
And frankly, this may sound a bit cold, but frankly, they're not at it. So it's not really for them. They're dead.
Yeah. How do you know that they wanted it, unless you're told?
Well, people are often told. The relatives are often told, and then they want to honor that. And we can understand that. And it is also true that many people suffer. I remember a case back in university where there was a woman, a girl I went to school with, and she was traumatized because her younger sibling had died when she was a child, and she was very close and decided not to go to the funeral. She just didn't get closure. She could never fully accept that he was gone.
Yeah.
It is important for the psyche to get some closure, as painful as it is. And if the family does not, to answer your question, if the family does not do anything and chooses to honor wishes, or for what their own reason, it's their family, everybody makes their choices, then the person, the individual that wants it, if you wanted it, Irene, you could develop a little ceremony for yourself.
Yeah, that's what we ended up doing, actually, for other people as well, not just for me, but for quite a few friends and that, you know.
Yes, they can organize their own. And the good news is we have that flexibility now. There is a lot of flexibility, but we do need to do what we can to take care of ourselves.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So two more questions. One is, this is from Michael Cabardos. How do we know if we should seek mental health or spiritual health when our gut alerts us to a problem?
When who alerts us to a problem?
When a gut feeling alerts you to a problem.
Okay, yeah. Well, you can do either, really. In the end, what we know in psychology, what we know in therapy, is that there's only one predictor of a positive outcome for a client in therapy, and that is the therapeutic alliance between the client and the practitioner. In other words, it's got to be a fit. If it's not a fit, and it doesn't matter whether it's a counselor or whether it's a faith leader, if it's not a fit, go and see someone else of the same faith or another counselor. But it matters the way you trust that person, the way you can open up to that person, the way you get your needs met from that practitioner. That's what matters, is your connection, your ability to connect to them. And it's not their fault, it's not your fault if it doesn't work, but it's got to be a fit.
So
I hope that helps.
So the next question is from Jetra. Jetra is probably the youngest person on the call. And his question is, how is age and spirituality related, and whether it affects the happiness level in any major way? That is where I'm, merged the question. But how is age and spirituality? Do adolescents think of spirituality the same way?
It's so interesting. I have people asking spiritual questions from all age groups. There are some very deep thinkers amongst teenagers. And of course, children ask spiritual question. Why did grandma have to suffer? Right? That's a spiritual question. Not easy to answer. And then there is no age barrier as to when we start to wonder about things. We don't always know how to articulate it, but we do know when we're suffering. We can make things really complicated, but in the end, we only ever feel good, bad, or indifferent, right? And when we feel bad, we want to find out why. And it's a really good start to know what we don't like. It's a really good start to know what we're curious about, right? Those are important questions. And I would encourage anyone to use a number of counselors, a number of faith leaders, different views. There are no two people who believe the same thing. Just like we're all unique, we all come at it from a different understanding. And we will create a different understanding from anything we hear. As you know, you can have 10 kids in a family. They all have different memories about their family life, right?
Right.
It's the way we are.
Right.
Yeah.
So last question. So we know you shared with us, we are fortunate at Northumberland Hills Hospital that we have the team, we have the resources. What does one do if they're not in the hospital? They don't have a doctor. They don't have a primary care doctor. How do they access this part? They can go to a walk-in, but the walk-in is separate. But what do people do in the community?
Is the question about physical care or spiritual care?
No, spiritual care. Like if somebody identifies that, or your person says, it might be beneficial. How do people, where do they find somebody?
Well, the one slide was about that, and I maybe could have spent a bit more time on it. There are, of course, many different faith traditions represented in this town and in the surrounding towns. And any of the spiritual care providers at the hospital, every one of us would be happy to sit down and meet at the hospital and have a conversation if somebody wanted to, and also counselors who have spiritual care training.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I don't see any other questions. Any other questions? Oh, so we have gone 7 minutes over time. So I appreciate everybody's time. Thank you, Sabine. This was quite meaningful for all of us. So thank you for giving your time and your expertise, and have a good night.
Yes, thank you so much for inviting me. It was a pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for the
Thank
question.
you.
Thanks,
Bye-bye.
Sabine.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.